Where were you when it happened? I asked.
I left the ball early and returned to the library.
He offered it like a confession. You couldn't have known. This is more my fault than anyone else's. A wave of guilt swept through me. The so-called Blue Legion, apparently a network of bitter nobles, all hated the king because of me, or at least what they perceived as my influence over him. The timing was deliberate, I observed.
Of course.
And the targets were anyone who supported the peace accords.
That much is clear.
Who is behind it? He rubbed his temples.
I fear there are many more suspects than we'd first thought.
I told him what Lady Blanding had said, her veiled threats that she had decided to leave us to our fate, and my suspicion that she'd known about the coming attack. He didn't look surprised.
Arcus has promised to give the Aris Plains back to the farmers of the southern provinces once he assures peace. I was surprised that he didn't see more direct opposition from his court, many of whom were given that land by Akur and Rasmus. Now we know why.
I feathered my fingertips over Arcus's bandage, the cold seeping into my skin. I sent a pulse of gentle heat into his shoulder near the wound, hoping it would help the healing process somehow, even just a little. What happens now?
I truly do not know. His court is divided. He has friends, most notably Lord and Lady Manus and Lord Pell. But they alone don't have the land or connections to have great influence. And many who do, like my cousin, Lord Trillin, choose neutrality over risk. They wait to see which way the wind blows before taking sides.
He paused.
At any rate, we must form a new plan. No one will sign accords with a monarch whose reign appears so tenuous.
His court is divided because of me, I said dully. His reign is tenuous because of me. What can I do to help him?
You were with the dignitary from the southern provinces when you were attacked, were you not?
If I could trust anyone, it was Brother Thistle. I told him everything.
Remarkable! What would the Sudesians want with you?
I have no idea.
Well, he mused. If they meant you harm, the Fireblood could have just killed you himself. Perhaps you are celebrated as a hero for destroying the Frost Throne and helping overthrow King Rasmus.
So I should trust him. Should I go if it will help Arcus achieve peace? Emotions chased one another across his face. Curiosity, doubt, uncertainty, excitement. He shook his head.
We cannot act rashly.
But we do need to act.
More than you know.
His tone was resigned. Why? What don't I know? There was something overly careful in his expression, as if he were preparing for my reaction.
Murders have risen tenfold in the villages within a few days' ride from here. In each case, the murderer has died of seemingly natural causes shortly after. But the blood found in the body is always black. I believe the Minax is possessing people, moving from village to village.
The pain of betrayal sent wild heat through my chest. How could you not tell me before now? I had a terrible thought. Did you and Arcus not trust me? Did you think I would... that I was so corrupted by the Minax that you weren't sure whose side I was on? After all, the Minax's possession had been like an opiate, erasing all worry and fear. Brother Thistle knew how I'd struggled not to let the creature consume me.
Of course not. Arcus insisted you were worried enough already without the burden of more guilt. He said you would blame yourself for releasing the Minax.
He was right about that. So it's out there possessing people. I clenched my hands together, making them kill each other and feeding on the grief that follows.
Perhaps, but I think its intentions go beyond that. Recently, our Frostblood General in the Aris Plains ordered his soldiers to attack a peaceful province with no command from the king nor a strategic goal in mind. They simply began cutting people down. I do not think it a coincidence that peace is always out of reach. The Minax thrives on war. If this goes on, we will continue to decimate one another with no end in sight. Arcus has sent his best trackers after it, but what would we do if we catch the person who is possessed? If we imprison or kill its host, the creature will merely choose another.
It seemed hopeless. Too many factors we didn't understand or couldn't control. But we can't do nothing. The Minrax is out there, slaughtering people, turning them against each other. Innocent lives! I gasped, my chest so tight I could barely breathe. Brother Thistle spoke softly, calming me.
You are right. We cannot afford to ignore this opportunity or the knowledge we now possess on how to kill the Minrax. Do you remember the book on the thrones I mentioned? The one that is no longer in our library?
I nodded. How could I forget Pernilius?
There were two copies, one for each Frostblood and Fireblood monarch, one for each throne. The secrets in it were considered dangerous, so it was kept under lock and key in King Akur's time.
He cleared his throat.
Managed to obtain it once.
You mean you stole it? I grinned in admiration.
Yes, well, borrowed is a more accurate word. I held the book only briefly, before Lord Eustathius discovered I had it and took it back. That book...
He turned and peered at the shelves as if he might summon the volume with the power of his will.
Is where I first learned of the prophecy of the Child of Light and the destruction of the throne. I am certain that it contained knowledge of the destruction of the Minrax. Since the day I returned here after King Rasmus banished me, I have scoured the castle to no avail.
Maybe Lord Eustathius still has it, I suggested.
I questioned him. He says he barely remembers the book, although he does enjoy thwarting me. We had a sort of informal competition for the king's ear many years ago.
So another copy lies in Sudesia, I said, drawing his attention back to the point at hand. But on which island? I'd seen the map showing islands clustered together like pieces of broken slate tossed to the ground.
I assume it is kept in the capital, Seir, where the queen lives, as well as being home to the school for Fireblood Masters.
It was the closest thing to hope I'd felt in weeks, but Arcus will never agree to my travelling to Sudesia. He'll say it's too dangerous. And even if he would allow it, you know he would send warships and soldiers to accompany me. We might as well declare war.
We need that book, he said. I'm convinced it has the answers we seek.
I saw my own certainty reflected in Brother Thistle's eyes. There was no alternative. I had to go. But we couldn't tell Arcus. Even as worry and guilt churned in my stomach, I couldn't help a surge of excitement at the prospect of boarding that ship. Sudesia was a land of warmth and fire. I had longed to know where Firebloods came from, the customs and practices of a place that seemed mysterious to me now, but was home to my ancestors. Home to my mother before she'd come to Tempesia, though she'd never told me why. Maybe in returning to her homeland, I would find that part of myself that echoed with empty longing since the day she died. When I get there, I said, if I get there safely, where should I start?
There is a library in the school for Fireblood Masters that is second to none, and older even than ours. If you can find the ancient texts, or perhaps a scholar with an obsession for esoteric knowledge... There lies our last hope of finding out how to destroy the Minrax.
Then you should come with me. No scholar is more obsessed than you.
I highly doubt your Sudesian friend would allow me on his ship.
Why shouldn't he? After all, if it weren't for you, King Rasmus would still be on the throne.
If it weren't for us.
He reached out and patted Arcus's hand where it lay limply on the covers.
Whatever our mistakes, we did accomplish that.
I covered Arcus's other hand with mine. We sat like that quietly for a minute, the three of us connected. We'd been through so much together. I didn't want to leave them. The thought alone made it feel like a steel clamp was squeezing my heart.
But it doesn't matter that I helped you, he continued. The Sudesians would only see me as a Frostblood, an enemy.
Then I'll go alone, I said softly. how can I leave Arcas like this, wondering if he'll recover? He'll worry about me.
I will tell him our plans as soon as you're gone. He will be angry, but he will forgive me. Try to send us a message when you arrive in Sudesia. Perhaps if the southern provinces are aiding the passage of Sudesian ships, they would also be willing to let messages pass.
I will. And I'll find the book.
Do not tell the queen your intentions. If she is under the influence of the curse, she will protect the throne at all costs. Your best chance is to ingratiate yourself with her and the Fireblood Masters. If they see you as some sort of hero for destroying the Frost Throne, you might be welcomed.
I noticed a thin coating of frost covering the monk's chair, a sign he was losing control of his gift and more anxious than he let on. And no wonder. There were so many hopeful assumptions in our plan, and so much on my shoulders. It was dizzying. For a minute, I just gripped my hands together and breathed deeply until I regained my composure. So, if you think about it, I said, not only will I be searching for the book,
I'll be trying to mend ties between our kingdoms, which is just what Arcas wants.
In that light, I could be called a sort of unofficial ambassador on behalf of the Frostbloods. I caught his eye and we both smiled at the irony, though his smile didn't reach his eyes. Really, Brother Thistle? Who would have thought?
As much as I cringe to think of sending you on a mission of diplomacy, he said, you are our best hope for peace, and our only hope for destroying the Minax.
We discussed the plan until my eyes grew heavy, and Brother Thistle left. Arcas's bed was so large that I was able to curl up at the foot quite comfortably. Exhaustion took over, and I drifted off immediately, opening my eyes only when I heard Arcas asking for water. Dawn seeped through the crack between the curtains, laying a yellow stripe across the floor. I hopped from the bed, shivering in the morning chill. I poured water from a crystal pitcher and held the cup to Arcas's blue-tinged lips. He struggled to lift his head. I slid one hand behind to help him, my heart contracting at the sign of weakness. Even in the battle for the throne, he hadn't been hurt like this. He took a sip and nodded, settling against the pillow as I put the glass back on the table.
I didn't expect you to be here, he said,
his voice rough from sleep. I smiled, light-headed with relief that he was awake and lucid. At your service.
I need to be ill more often, he said. My own personal...
If you say servant, I'm leaving. The truth was, he could say whatever he wanted, and I wasn't going anywhere. I would savour these last few moments with him.
One eyebrow rose. I was going to say, healer.
Ah. I smoothed my fingertips over his forehead, and he closed his eyes with a sigh. That's acceptable. Although I have no idea what to do other than keep you in bed. A mischievous grin spread across his face. I narrowed my eyes at him. And don't say anything about how I'm to keep you in bed. You already embarrassed me in front of Lord Manus. I've never seen a Frostblood blush so much. He huffed a small laugh.
I'm sorry I don't remember it, then.
He glanced around.
Was Brother Thistle here last night? I have a vague memory of hearing your voices.
A pulse of alarm jolted through me. How much did he hear? We were discussing who could be behind the attack. What to do next? His eyes fluttered closed.
And? What did you come up with?
Nothing definite as yet. I hated to lie to him. It was harder than I thought it would be. I continued stroking his forehead, and trailed the back of my hand against his cheek.
Ouch!
His hand came up to grab mine. I blinked in surprise to see the ring Kai had given me on my finger. I'd forgotten all about it.
Where did you get that? He asked.
This filigree is so intricate.
It reminds me...
His brows pulled together.
It reminds me of a ring that has been passed down in my family. It was from Sudesia. But it has a sapphire, and thicker here.
Oh? I didn't know what else to say. If I told him about the ring, I'd have to tell him everything.
Ruby. His voice was hard. What aren't you telling me?
You've been keeping things from me, too, I countered quickly, pulling my hand from his. The Minax? The murders? A flicker of guilt passed over his expression.
That's different. I was trying to protect you.
Well, so am I. His glance fell back to my hand.
Where did you get the ring?
I sighed, resigned. From the southern dignitary. I paused. Only he wasn't who he claimed to be. As it turned out, he was a Sudesian. His eyes pierced mine.
How the blazes did he get into the ball?
I fiddled with the ring, watching as it caught a band of sunlight. I don't know. He must have had someone vouch for his false identity. Anyway, he came to the ball to see me.
To see you?
His volume rose with each word. What for? I told him what Kai had said, leaving out the part about the people of the southern provinces helping him through the Frostblood blockade. If Arcus knew that, he'd be forced to deal with it.
So this stranger claims to be a Sudesian and he's offering you passage across the sea?
He was angry.
Why? What do they want with you?
I shrugged. Perhaps it's an interest in peace, which he thinks could be achieved through someone like me negotiating. But I didn't get to ask further questions. After the attack, he ran off.
Not exactly the mark of an honest man. He could have made the offer directly to me.
He doesn't trust you. Surely that's not a surprise. All the Sudesians know is what your brother has done to the Firebloods in Tempesia. And we'd just been attacked.
For all we know, he was in on the attack.
I shook my head. That makes no sense. Kai fought the attackers off with me.
Kai? He spat. You're on a first-name basis with him.
I stiffened. When Drake had a knife to my throat, Kai saved my life. Arcus's face lost colour.
Drake had a knife to your throat?
I pulled back the collar of my robe to uncover the tender skin Drake had scored with his blade. I would have died if not for Kai. He swallowed and was silent for a minute. His expression didn't change, but his eyes showed fury and fear as they rested on the wound. Then his nostrils flared.
You wouldn't have been out there in the first place if not for him. What was he planning? To kidnap you? Who knows what would have happened if those handy Frostblood assassins hadn't come along?
Are you even hearing yourself? This could be the only way to repair ties with the southern provinces and find a way to destroy the Minax, which, in case you've forgotten, is turning people into murderers. What if it's planning to come back for me as it promised? I gestured to my heart-shaped scar. What if the visions, which are only getting worse, are a precursor to possession? What if I become the next murderer? I can't just sit around waiting and wondering. Not if I can do something to protect the kingdom, to protect you. I was half breathless after rushing to say my piece. I took a steadying breath. Brother Thistle knows of a book. He waved his hand.
I know about the blasted book. Don't you think I've been searching for it too?
Then you know how important it is. Perhaps if I can somehow learn how to bring the Fire Minax back to Tempesia, we can find a way to destroy both creatures at once. So fine, I'll admit that we don't know much about Kai. But considering what's at stake and what we stand to gain, it's worth the risk.
Worth the risk. As if it takes much of anything for you to put yourself in danger.
It's not safe here, either.
It will be, he swore. I almost lost you. I'll be a damn sight more careful whom I trust now. And by the way, the Blue Legion, or whatever they call themselves, tried to kill me too. Are you suggesting I also run to Sudesia?
You're so infuriating! Think, Arcus, why do these nobles want to kill you?
Because I'm making changes. Because they'll lose the land my brother gave them. And because they want to hold on to old prejudices and hatred.
Yes, precisely. Rasmus spent 2 years twisting everyone and everything to suit him, no doubt with the Minax influencing every thought and decision. And now you're trying to untwist it all in a matter of weeks. It's one thing to get treaties signed, but it's another to parade a Fireblood in front of them all. Arcus's eyes flared, then narrowed.
Be very, very careful, Ruby. If you're suggesting that I'm using you as some sort of taunt...
His eyes burned with cold fire.
To imply that it's wrong for you to be here because of your heritage...
He shook his head.
You're a hypocrite.
And you're a fool if you don't see what you're doing. My presence here is hurting you, and I can't stand it. His eyes were made of cracked ice, his cheekbones and jaw carved from stone, the scars standing out as if a sculptor hadn't sanded the edges down yet.
I'll die before I send you away to satisfy their hateful expectations.
The vow sent a quiver of something painfully sweet through my nerves. But, Arcus, if you die, what do you think will happen to me? His eyes closed slowly and stayed closed. He looked almost defeated, so unlike his usual self, and I remembered that his body was fighting a battle to heal. I'm sorry, I said, slumping onto the edge of the bed. You're so tired. You're injured and you should be resting. We can talk about this later. He shook his head, eyes still closed.
I can't trust you not to leave.
I hopped up again.
You're being so obstinate. This could be the only way to save us. I came here alone and fought in the arena and killed and almost died several times over. Now I'm supposed to live wrapped in lamb's wool so I don't get a scratch.
I realized I was trembling and my hands were balled into fists. If there was one thing I couldn't bear, it was confinement. I wouldn't let anyone stop me, not even Arcus. No, I'm going. I'm going. His eyes snapped open.
No, Ruby, you're not.
What are you going to do? My voice rose to a shout. Lock me in your keep?
If I have to.
Well, you will have to. Just like your brother did. And I swear I'll never speak to you again. I vow it on my mother's life.
The words echoed and hung in the air like knives about to fall. My stomach lurched with a fear I hadn't felt for weeks. Regret sank heavy, sharp talons into my chest. Had I just said that? How had we gotten here?
Go then, said Arcus, his voice a bitter thread of sound.
If the silence weren't so absolute, I wouldn't have heard him at all. The air reverberated with hurt.
Go to your people. Risk your life, if it seems that important to you. I won't be accused of keeping you somewhere you don't want to be. You'd only come to resent me. I refuse to be the source of your unhappiness.
It's important to you too, I said, my voice breaking. I'm doing this for you.
He didn't move. Didn't speak for several moments.
Tell yourself that, if you must. Chase things you'll never find. Trust the lies of a stranger.
I don't think he's lying, Arcus. I don't.
I can't talk about this anymore. Just go.
Suddenly, tears were behind my eyes and I couldn't breathe.
I can't leave you like this, when you're so weak. Let me stay until you fall asleep again, at least.
No.
Then I'll send for Brother Thistle.
He scoffed.
I don't want to see him either.
I could feel the change in him, the determination to shut us out. I told myself his anger was rooted in hurt, his cold rejection based in fear. Arcus had learned that caring led to pain. His mother had been killed when he was young. He'd loved his younger brother Rasmus, but was forced to lead a rebellion against him to save the kingdom from the cursed king.
When we'd lived at the Abbey, he'd pushed me away.
So fearful of his own feelings for me that he'd denied them for as long as he could. He was trying to protect himself by building walls, layer after layer of solid ice to keep out anyone who could disappoint or hurt him. If he kept it up, he would only succeed in isolating himself from the people who cared about him.
"Don't say that," I said softly. "You're like a son to him. He just wants to help. Don't punish him for agreeing with me."
"He can accompany you on your way to the port and then go to the abbey from there. I have enough enemies here."
Brother Thistle was hurt but resigned at being expelled from the castle like an unwelcome guest. He spent the days packing, lost in his private worries. Morella, on the other hand, once I admitted my plans, pestered me for details until I told her how I intended to find Kai and Tevros and sail from there. She insisted on helping me pack, ignoring my protests that I didn't plan to bring more than a satchel I could carry easily. As she looked critically through my wardrobe, she offered advice about the route to Tevros and told cautionary tales about the dangers of trusting strangers, mostly involving loss of coin and life. I finally asked bluntly if she thought I was foolish to go. Her violet eyes stayed steady on mine as she contemplated the question. My stomach tied itself in knots as I waited. Her opinion, I realized, had become important to me. Finally, she looked away, stuffing a ball gown into my travel chest. I doubted I'd have any use for such clothing, but since I wasn't bringing the chest, I didn't bother to say anything. She seemed to enjoy packing, and I was touched that she wanted to help. "Whether it's wise is irrelevant," she said, carefully folding a chemise I also wouldn't be bringing. She looked serious, almost melancholy, very unlike her. Before I could ask what was wrong, she shrugged and grabbed another gown. "Sometimes there's no choice. We all have our role to play, and this is yours. You must go." I wish I could feel as certain as she sounded. I tried 2 or 3 times a day to see Arcus, but the guards turned me away every time. Finally, on the 3rd day, I threatened to burn the door down, speaking loudly enough for half the castle to hear. Arcus's voice came through the thick oak. "Let her in." I entered his room, all my bluster leaving as soon as I set foot on the plush carpet. The guard shut the door behind me. Arcus sat propped up on his pillows, and his face held more colour, but the look in his eyes was blank, empty, focused on something behind me, as if I was a stranger who happened to walk between him and the person he was talking to. Apparently he'd spent the last 3 days reinforcing those walls. I stood awkwardly for a moment. "How's your wound?"
"They say it's healing well."
I nodded. Everything about his voice, posture and expression told me that I wasn't welcome, that he couldn't bear to look at me. I forced the words out, one by one. "I came to say goodbye." His eyes slid closed. If it weren't for the humming tension in every line of his body, I'd think he'd just fallen asleep. "This is one of the hardest things I've ever had to do," I whispered, trembling. He shrugged his good shoulder, an elongated motion that spoke of indifference. Heat flared, instant and sharp, and it was a relief. I preferred anger to that killing uncertainty. "So you're not even speaking to me?" His eyes met mine with an intense look that was both confused and angry.
"I just don't understand why you're doing this. Why trust that stranger? You say you're doing this for the kingdom and for me, but admit it, Ruby. You're really doing this for you. You want to go to Sudesia and you want to do it on your own terms. This whole thing is damn selfish."
The words were equivalent to a shove in the chest. "You're being unreasonable," I argued.
"You, who prides himself on reason. Except I've never been reasonable when it comes to you."
The bold statement brought me up short. If he'd said that to me a few days ago, I would have been delighted, buoyed at the thought that he felt too much for me to be logical. But now the words sliced my ribcage like a scythe. This might be the last time he admitted to feeling anything for me more than anger, or worse, indifference. in our shared history, I'd never truly let Arcas see how much I needed him. And he, in perfect pantomime, did the same. No one wanted to be the first to admit we felt more than we could handle. And now I was walking away. A stabbing pain radiated from my heart, which seemed confused about whether to pour out heat or to stop beating altogether. Was he right? Was I just looking for excuses to go to Sudesia? No. I might be impulsive, but Brother Thistle wasn't. He had no agenda other than helping Arcas, helping Tempesia. He also cared about me and wouldn't risk my safety if he didn't think it absolutely necessary. We needed to take this chance. And I had to try to pull Arcas back to me before I left. I moved so close that my legs pressed against the side of the mattress. My hand came to rest on his arm, its muscles rigid with tension. The temperature dropped, giving him away. He wasn't as calm as he wanted me to believe. There were cracks in his defenses. As I bent toward him, he turned his head away and my lips landed on his cheek. The world narrowed to that small patch of his skin where two opposing temperatures struggled for dominance. The insistent heat of my lips, the defiant cold of his cheek, neither yielding, neither moving. The breath in my lungs cooled. The realization hit me like shards of broken glass. He was not going to acknowledge my caress. He was going to pretend I wasn't even here, denouncing me completely with his perfect stillness. It felt as if I were being slowly ripped in half. He was forcing me into a choice I'd had no intention of making. To save the kingdom, I would lose him. My heart skipped a beat when he finally moved. His hand came out to cover mine, his skin colder than my northern village in the dead of winter. Relief flooded me at his touch, until I realized he was only peeling my fingers from his arm, one by one.
Goodbye, Ruby.
His voice was as empty as the abandoned arena, echoing with the ghosts of past pain. The shock somehow released me from my paralysis. I straightened. Goodbye. I echoed, my blood heating with anger. His skin was marble, his eyes so pale they were light grey, almost colourless. I know you care about me, I wanted to shout. Don't push me away! I needed to move. I focused on the muscles in my legs, telling them to turn me in the direction of the door, ordering my feet to take me away. Now, quick, before you scream and rage and make a fool of yourself! Then, just as I started to turn, his face twisted, as if something inside him had suddenly broken. His hands gripped my wrists and pulled, but I was already pitching forward, my hand clutching his shoulder. Our lips met with jarring force, the reverberation landing in my jaw, and then the angle righted itself as he tilted his head to welcome the invasion. He was so cold against my tongue that I shivered. He tasted like a winter morning, of icy water and mint tea. I drank him in with thirsty sips and he nipped my lower lip in punishment and reward. When his fingers dove into the hair at the nape of my neck and his open mouth slid to the sensitive spot under my ear, I forgot everything except need, scrambling to throw my leg over his hips so I straddled him, my chest leaning against his. It took a moment for me to recognize his sharp inhalation as pain. He was injured and I was hurting him. I subsided instantly, crumpling next to him like a falling scarf, settling slowly into stillness. His hand grabbed mine and drew it to his mouth, continuing the kiss in a safer, softer way. His lips rested against my wrist, where the red vein still throbbed with passion, soothing the skin while the pulse beneath slowly returned to normal. We stayed that way for a long time, silent except for breathing that went from ragged to even. I shifted so that my head was pillowed on a spot low enough on his chest that I didn't touch the bandage. His hand settled on my head, stroking my hair. My scalp tingled with pleasure. After a while, the silence thickened. "Why do we always go back to hurting each other?" I asked in a small voice, hoping not to destroy the fragile truce. He paused long enough that I started to worry.
"Because we feel too much," he said roughly.
I nodded, my head still tucked against his torso, relieved and full of understanding. "You hate it?" feeling. "No, I don't," he denied instantly. "I hate being at the mercy of it. I hate when I can't tuck the feelings away because they're too strong."
I lifted his hand and played with his fingers,
thinking how beautiful they were. Strong and capable and dusted with fine brown hairs. "You'd be better off with someone who..." I swallowed. "Didn't make you feel so out of control."
"Maybe,"
he said after a moment, making my heart stutter sickly.
"But I wouldn't choose that."
I said very quietly, "You might have to choose that." He had a duty to his people, to his court, but I wanted to hear him say that he didn't want the perfectly bred Mirella, that he'd rather have me. But that was unfair to ask of him now, when I was about to leave. I closed my eyes tight, tight, and tried not to think about how much easier that choice could be in my absence. "We have to let each other go a little," he said very softly, as if reading my mind, confirming my worst fears. "We both know that the future... we might have choices ahead that we can't predict now. We have to allow each other to make them without blame." He said it so gently, tenderly. Somehow that made it hurt more. Why did he have to be so reasonable now, when I'd finally surrendered to feeling? I couldn't hold back the tears, my body shaking a little as I tried to quell them.
"I don't want you to go," he said unevenly, "but I'll go mad if I try to keep holding on. You are a flame, Ruby, and fire can either be free or it will be smothered. The last thing I want..."
His voice broke, and the sound was like a kick in my chest.
"The last thing I want is to smother you."
I sat up and turned away fully so that my back faced him, not as a dismissal, but because I needed the space. I didn't want to think about how right he was.
His hand came out and smoothed my back, first pushing my hair out of the way, then touching the base of my neck, his fingers lingering over each vertebra on the way down.
I turned back to him and grabbed his hand, pressing my lips to it, and resting my forehead against his knuckles. "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry." He twisted so that his fingers touched my cheek and my lips rested in his palm. After a minute, he took a shuddering breath.
"Don't take this the wrong way," he said softly. "But I'm so tired. I can't bear much more of this."
I knew he was injured and sore and exhausted, but it still hurt to be pushed away. I had to be mature enough to leave him, to stop begging him, in all my subtle and not-so-subtle ways, to give me reasons to stay. If I backed down now, he doomed us all with my cowardice. But I couldn't help asking quietly, "If... when I come back, will there be any place for me? With you?" His voice was broken granite.
"Always."
Emotion filled my chest, so much I ached with it. I couldn't ask for more than that. So, I gave his hand a harsh, almost bruising kiss, stood, turned, and walked to the door. I didn't let myself look back. I knew I wasn't that strong. felt like lead weights had been tied to my feet. I stepped from the room, shut the door, and moved carefully down the hallway, feeling as if I'd left behind some vital and irreplaceable part of myself in the room. The sky was grey outside the windows. The light that flowed into the hallway was grey. Even my skin, when I looked at my hand that still wore the ring, looked a sickly grey. But the ruby in the ring shone as if the very heart of fire lived inside of it, and my heart gave a struggling little pulse of heat in reply. Chapter 6. A briny tang salted the air long before I crested a ridge that overlooked the bustling port city of Tevros. A vast bay sparkled in the midday sun. Docks poked out from the wharf surrounded by a profusion of vessels, from humble fishing boats to fat merchant ships, all with blinding white sails. I pushed a hand against my galloping heart. For a minute, the fog that had clouded my mind since leaving Arcos lifted. I'd once asked if he would show me the sea some day, a longing I'd had since childhood, when the farthest I'd travelled was to the next village. Arcos had agreed, but now I was seeing it without him. What would he have pointed out to me if he were here? What might he see that I would miss? Even with the rocky headlands jutting out on both sides, the sheer mass of water amazed me. Staring at it gave me a feeling of insignificance. Once aboard the ship, I would be nothing more than a grain of sand on a piece of driftwood, tossed about by that infinity of churning and thrashing. I sighed and continued down a winding footpath. I tried, for the 100th time, to rub the ache in my chest with the heel of my hand. It felt like a thorn was rooted there, a little to the left of my breastbone, somewhere soft and tender where it would fester. Each word Arcus had said to me in that final conversation kept echoing in my head, the feeling of our kiss imprinted on my lips and in my blood. He said there'd always be a place for me. I told myself that, especially when I started imagining the worst, that he might cut me out of his memories, unwinding the threads of shared experiences that bound us, and freezing out the parts of his heart he'd told me, in that tender moment at the ball, that I'd melted. I took a shuddering breath and dropped my hand. Hearts didn't explode, no matter how much it might feel like it. The pain would ease, eventually, and I couldn't second-guess my decision to lead. It served no purpose. It was a relief to finally be alone. Brother Thistle had accompanied me, using the ride to discuss details of my mission, right up to the crossroads a mile back, my fork taking me to Tevros, his to Fallwind Abbey. As I'd shifted some of my supplies to his horse, he'd dismounted and surprised me with a quick hug.
"Be careful."
He put his hands on my shoulders and peered at me intently.
"Do not take any foolish risks."
"You take the fun out of everything."
"You'll be circumspect in all things, cautious and calm. You won't lose your temper."
I glanced around. "Who are you speaking to? That certainly doesn't sound like me." His thick brows moved together like storm clouds gathering above the pale skies of his irises.
"I wish I could go with you."
"Well, since you can't, make sure you check in on Arcus, would you? I hate that he's alone with the Blue Legion still lurking about."
"Don't worry, I won't leave him for long, just until his temper cools. And he has several allies he can trust. I made sure they would watch over him. Focus on your task. And keep safe."
I patted the back of his hand.
"You too."
I'd sent my gelding with him, eager to be out of the saddle after 3 days' ride. We'd had a dozen guards nipping at our heels the whole journey, on Arcus's orders, but I'd managed to convince them to return to the capital this morning. The previous night, we'd gone to an inn, and I'd paid for round after round of ale with the heavy bag of coins that Royal Purser had given me for the trip. The guards had slumped over their pommels as we rode from the inn to the crossroads, their bleary, bloodshot eyes scanning half-heartedly for trouble.
Brother Thistle assured them they could leave me to my own devices.
We both knew a contingent of the King's Guard were probably Ruffle Kai's feathers.
Better I go alone. Tevros was nothing much to look at. If the gleaming harbour was its face, then the city was its backside, with a tightly packed centre hemmed in by cramped and ugly houses perched like squashed hats on scrubby, sloping land. Soon, I was off the hilly footpath and weaving through the busy streets. I didn't have much experience with cities. It was all so much to take in. Noisily rattling carts and painted wagons, baritone-voiced sailors and well-dressed merchants, exhausting-looking parents herding inquisitive children, vegetable stands and storefronts and peddlers, and the smells of fish and sweat and flowers and piss and the sea. As I passed a shadowed alley, there was a flash of movement, a brush against my leg, and I suddenly felt lighter on one side. It took a second to realize my money purse was gone. Furious at how easily I'd been robbed, I followed the sound of running feet. When I turned the corner into another alley, I came up short. There stood the familiar lean form of a ginger, gold-haired, olive-skinned, crookedly smiling man. He was holding a small urchin who thrashed and kicked, a money purse clutched in one small, dirty hand. "Ah, now what have I caught?" Kai mused calmly. "A tiny fish. But you're too small for the dinner table."
"Let me go!"
The voice was high, and I realized the pickpocket was a girl, her eyes wide.
"Or I'll tell the constable you're trying to kidnap me."
Kai chuckled. "You wish to clean out our purses, but we're not ready to part with all those shiny coins just yet."
"Just bumped into her by accident," the pickpocket said. "I didn't mean to," Kai tusked.
"Don't debase yourself with lies, little fish. You're skilled at your vocation, and I appreciate skill. Why don't we test the dexterity of those clever fins? If you catch this coin as it falls, it's yours. If I catch it, we'll find that constable and see if he throws you back into the sea." Kai took the purse, drew out a coin, and tossed it into the air. It arced high and descended.
The girl's hand shot out and snatched it. She grinned, her face flushed with triumph.
Seeing her smile, a bolt of recognition shot through me. A sick little girl on a winter's night when I'd run away from the abbey and ended up at the camp of some refugees who had fled the Frost King's soldiers. The families had been on their way to Tevros to see if they could board a ship and make a new life somewhere else. But the girl had been ill with a fever and a cough. I tried to help by finding the right herbs to heal her before the adults had chased me off. I'd often wondered about her, hoping she'd recovered. I took in the urchin's flushed cheeks and the thick hair escaping from her cap. Her eyes shone with health, no longer bleary with fever, but her face was leaner, her features sharper. "Katrin," I said, remembering her name. Her eyes widened further. She turned swiftly, but Kai's hand shot out to grab her elbow before she could bolt.
"I believe the lady knows you, little fish," he said calmly.
"Katrin, it's me, Ruby." I stepped forward and smiled reassuringly. "I met you when you had a fever. You probably don't remember."
"I remember."
She stared at me for a few seconds.
"They said you were a fireblood, and you'd get us all killed."
My lips twisted. "Well, I hope that last part wasn't true." I continued to smile, wishing she didn't look so scared. Or was that resentment in her gaze? "I'm so glad you recovered and made it to Tevros."
"Tevros is a hole," she said bluntly. "There's hardly any work here, and no ships will take us anywhere without the coin. My parents spent all their money on herbs to cure my lungs. Then my father got sick. At least, that's what my mother calls it. But he changed into someone else overnight. Went wild for no reason. One day, he killed someone in a fight. Went to prison and died a week later." I felt the blood leave my face. "Katrin, I'm so sorry." There was no doubt that her father had been possessed by the Minax.
which meant that in freeing it, I had ruined her family.
She shrugged off my sympathy, but the pain in her eyes was unmistakable. I turned to Kai.
Give the purse back to her.
He looked at me quizzically for a moment, and shrugged and offered it up. Katrin's eyes went wide.
Really?
You need it more than I do, I said. Her hand flashed out, and the purse disappeared quickly into some hidden pocket in her patched and baggy vest.
This'll keep us fed for weeks, she said, eyes bright. Months!
Listen, Katrin, I said impulsively. I'm about to go on a voyage, and I'm thinking life aboard a ship would be better than life on the streets. Why don't you come with me? She looked up at me. Her eyes narrowed thoughtfully, but then a chorus of young voices came from the street and her eyes widened again. One of the gangs. They don't like me poaching here. Time to go. Katrin, wait. I'd like to help you if... But she was as slippery as the nickname Kai had given her. A little fish that slid from his grasp and disappeared into the crowd. I rushed into the street, but she was gone.
A friend of yours? Kai asked as he followed me. I scanned the forest of heads, but Katrin was nowhere to be seen.
As we walked toward the wharf, I told him the barest details of my first meeting with Katrin, lengthening my strides to keep up with his.
Ah, the little fish has had a hard time of it.
I was surprised at his regretful tone, which made me like this arrogant stranger just a little bit more.
I would have offered her a place on the ship if she'd stayed.
Really? He shrugged.
Why not? Either way, she's gone, along with your purse.
He looked at me askance.
Did no one teach you to guard your gold?
I'm not used to having anything to steal. Speaking of, I believe this is yours. I slid the ring off my finger and he took it, our fingers brushing briefly. Though his skin was hot, I shivered slightly. It was still so strange to feel skin the same temperature as mine. We turned a corner, and suddenly we were on the timber-floored wharf set against a sparkling blue-green harbour. I followed Kai through a moving maze of seafaring folk. They marched past carrying barrels or crates, sold fresh fish from rickety stalls, and played noisy games of dice. Here and there, families and sweethearts said goodbye before boarding ships. A young couple embraced, looking as if they never wanted to let each other go. I swallowed and turned away. I didn't need to witness anyone else's goodbyes. I just endured one of my own. We stopped at a scarred wooden door with a faded sign bearing what appeared to be a rotund weasel smoking a pipe.
"The Fat Badger," Kai said with a flourish. "Where no one asks questions as long as your pockets are deep. Lucky for you, I didn't give my money away."
"And how did you get your hands on Tempesian money?" His brow twitched up.
"Does it really matter?"
It didn't. He could be a thief or a charlatan, but he was still my ticket to Sedesia. There were only a few quiet patrons in the tavern, a man and a woman talking over a meal at a small round table. A few people at a long wooden bar. A pulse of cold air signalled that at least one of the patrons might be a Frostblood. A strange feeling came over me. Dizziness and a prickling on the back of my neck. "Not now," I muttered. This was no time to be thrust into a vision. But none came. Only an unsettled feeling, as if unseen bees hummed their way around the room, waiting for a chance to sting. A stocky barmaid wearing a dirty smock over a heavily patched dress brought two bowls of stew to our table.
"Extra pepper, just how you like it," she said to Kai. "Do you need anything else, love? Anything at all?"
Kai grinned.
"Not now, thanks, Inge."
He gave her a wink, making her cheeks redden. I wondered if she knew he was a Fireblood, and whether it would matter to her either way, considering the strength of that blush.
"Tempesian food is so bland," Kai muttered as she left, poking at his stew with his spoon.
My mouth was too full to reply.
A hot meal was welcome after the hard cheese, dried meat and stale bread I'd eaten for the past 3 days. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught the man at the small table staring at me. But when I lifted my head to meet his gaze, he wasn't looking at me at all. Then from my left, I saw heads from the bar angle toward me. When I turned toward them, they were hunched over their tankards or chatting with the barmaid. As I looked back at Kai, I saw that he held a knife, the serrated blade pointed towards me. I reared back. But then I blinked, and it wasn't a knife. It was a spoon, frozen halfway to his lips. One of his brows lifted in inquiry.
Something wrong?
The buzz in the back of my mind rose to a roar. It was joined by dark, tinny laughter that I knew. No. We have to get out of here, I said. Or I tried to, but my tongue felt thick in my mouth, the muscles too tight.
What?
Kai said.
What did you say?
True vessel, said the resonant, bell-like voice that had once echoed from the throne. It was bigger now, stronger, but smoother too, more controlled, more convincing as it chimed with soft words I longed to hear.
Ah, how you hurt inside, it crooned. Pain, loneliness, grief, tearing you apart. So unnecessary, so wrong for you, for us.
I shook my head, breathing shakily. The Minax's mind touched mine, stirring up all my sadness and loss and siphoning it away, replacing it with heady relief. When I glanced at the people at the bar again, they were all looking at me. They all hated me. They wanted to kill me. They were rising from their seats, drawing knives from sleeves or pockets or boots, moving closer.
Ruby,
a voice said, the accent pronounced.
Ruby, what's wrong?
I turned to see Kai, and two images phased in and out. First a look of concern on his face, then a look of killing fury. His hand held a knife, then it didn't.
Knife?
No knife. Concern, hatred, danger, safety. And it was the arena all over again. The sense of life or death, the longing to live, the relief that darkness was taking over. Feelings no longer mattered. All the pain I'd felt over leaving Arcus conveniently faded away.
They will kill you, said the voice in my head. They are all against you. They will plunge their knives into your flesh and rejoice in your blood spilling on the floor.
Joyous darkness pulsed. How breathtaking. How enticing, how irresistible. Lost in its caress, I let it flow over me and envelop me like a sweetly clinging fog.
We will destroy them. Trust only me.
The world lost colour, and I was filled with stark power. I could see my opponent's beating hearts. I fought against the impulse to cease that beating, grasping at sanity as I might grasp at the edge of a cliff to avoid plummeting to my death. But my enemies were all rushing at me now, and it was live or die, them or me.
Ruby! Kai yelled. What are you—
My hand, which no longer belonged to me, threw out fire. A man convulsed as heat filled his chest, his eyes rolling to show the white. He fell and landed on his back, his head hitting the floor. His fingers twitched, his head turned to the side, and he was still. Screams and chaos. A strobe of sunlight as the door opened, people rushing out, someone's hands on my wrists, holding my arms to my sides, a voice shouting at me in another language, and all the while the whisper in my head told me I'd done well, filled me with light-headed glee, softened the edges of everything, and laughed. I laughed too.
I couldn't stop. Harsh swearing in my ear and hands on my upper arms, shoving me toward the door.